lesson after today, but I kind of doubt it. I imagine there's going to be two. I want to try mostly just to read with a few comments to connect things together. Anyway, turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. And our lesson today starts with verse 11. 2 Chronicles 36, verse 11. Zedekiah was 120 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God, and humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Lord. Now, I mentioned last week that Nebuchadnezzar was the one that put him in play. He's the one that made him king. If you turn to, you don't lose your place here, but turn to 2 Kings 24. And verse 17. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah. So the king of Babylon named the king of Judah, and he changed his name even. So we can see by this time Judah had hardly any power left at all. They were mostly subjects, but still had at least the look of being a sovereign country. Anyway, turn back to 2 Chronicles 36, and he was 21 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God, and humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Lord. Now, we don't have prophets nowadays. We have preachers, men that are called of God to proclaim God's word to us. We have pastors or elders, whichever you want to call them, to instruct us in how we are to live our lives. But we also have a responsibility. The book tells us all this. It just, okay, he's the face that we look to here. I mean, we don't have a face to look to as far as Christ is concerned, because we're not supposed to have a picture in our mind, I don't even believe. I know one thing, I've never seen a picture that people have drawn or painted or anything like that, that the Bible would be satisfied and say, well, this is probably what Jesus looked like. We know that Jesus looked like a Jewish man. He had relatively short hair, and he had a beard. That's what we know about him. And he wasn't a pretty boy. So, that's what we know about him. You see a picture of the pretty flowing blonde hair and the pretty blue eyes and clean shaven, that's not him. I can guarantee you that. And you know, it's wrong. You know, you don't want to have, that's akin to setting up an idol, actually. You don't know exactly what he looks like, but we know when we see him, we'll know who he is. There won't be any doubt then. Anyway, the last part up there, it says, he humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Lord. Now, we've already been through Jeremiah, and our pastor did a bang-up job on that. I had to change a few Sunday school lessons, but turn to Jeremiah 21. And we're going to read the first 10 verses of that chapter. Jeremiah 21, beginning with verse 1. The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, when King Zedekiah sent unto him Pashur, the son of Micaiah, and Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying, Inquire, I pray thee, of the Lord for us, and Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. I want to make a comment here. I have pointed out to Brother McCool at least one time, he said Nebuchadnezzar or Nebuchadnezzar, and it was the other name in the book. These are pretty much interchangeable, I have since discovered. So, if you see Nebuchadnezzar, you can put in Nebuchadnezzar. It makes no difference. Anyway, a king of Babylon maketh war against us. If so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he may go up from us. So they're wanting to know if God's going to bail them out again. Now you remember what it said? In verse 12, back in 2 Chronicles 36, it says he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God. He didn't do anything good. Had no expectation that the Lord would help him out. But yet, he sent anyway. He sent to Jeremiah and asked. Said, is God going to come and help us out? And we have a lot of people nowadays that live their lives like the devil, and they expect on their deathbed that the Lord's going to bail them out. Christ is not a fire escape. If he is not your Lord, he is your judge. You better take that into account, how you live your life. Now, how you live your life is not going to make you a Christian or anything like that. If you don't know Christ, that's it. There's nothing else you can do. If you are a saved person and you're living like the devil, and it can happen, you better get right. You better get right. God chastens his own. There's going to be a chastening. It's a firm instruction, I'll put it that way. I have been instructed before, so I know, but Zedekiah sent to Jeremiah the prophet, and he says, inquire, I pray thee, in verse 2, inquire, I pray thee, of the Lord for us, for Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, maketh war against us. You know, the king of Babylon is going to come and get us. If so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works. Now, isn't that pitiful? Here is a guy who has seen all these things happen. All the Lord had done for Judah and Jerusalem in particular. And all he did was evil in the sight of the Lord. And then he had the gall to send to Jeremiah and says, you know, if so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, will he bail us out again, that he may go up from us? So, what does the Lord say? Now, this is Jeremiah's words, but it's the Lord talking. Then said Jeremiah unto them, Thus shall you say to Zedekiah, here it comes, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands, You're not even going to be able to fight. Wherewith you fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you without the walls, and I will assemble them in the midst of this city. They're going to be inside your city walls. You won't be able to stand against them. Verse 5, and I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm, even in anger and in fury and in great wrath. And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both men and beasts. They shall die of a great pestilence. So not only are they going to be besieged by the king of Babylon, they're going to be inside the city. They're going to finally get in there. And not only that, there's going to be pestilence. Now, pestilence can be many things. You know, I don't know exactly what it is. It could have been a famine. Generally not. Generally when they call a famine, it's a famine. You know, that's what it's called. Could have been disease, something like that. But it ends up being like 2 years, I think it was. I didn't study more on that because I was going to try to get down early, but I'm not. So anyway, there's all these things going on. I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast. They shall die of a great pestilence. So not only is Babylon going to be fighting against them, God says there in verse 5, I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm. Now, did God show up and go around smacking people silly or anything like that? No, he sent the king of Babylon. That's why he was there. God sent him. Now, there's a time coming that even though the king of Babylon was doing God's will, king of Babylon paid for it. And we won't get to that today. But just because you're doing God's will, sometimes evil people are used to carry out God's pleasure. And king of Babylon was an evil man. And though he was doing God's will, he's going to pay the price for it, going against God's people. You can't do that. Anyway, in verse 7, and afterwards saith the Lord, I will deliver Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his servants, and the people, and such as are left in this city, from the pestilence, and from the sword, and from the famine, into the hands of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life, and he shall smite them with the edge of the sword. He shall not spare them, neither have pity, nor have mercy. He's already set the stage. Now, this is before this happened. This is before this all happened. This is given a prophecy. He told them what's going to happen to them. There's not going to be any quarter given. There's no pity, no mercy. Now, is that going to mean they're going to be wiped out? No. Not so. Anyway, verse 8, and unto this people thou shalt say, thus saith the Lord, behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death. There's going to be a way you can survive. And the other way is you're going to die. You either do this or you're going to die. You remember when Moses and the people were in the wilderness and they were being stung, and they had to look up to, you know, the serpent. They had to look up to the serpent. You know, you can look or you can die. Same kind of thing here. You can do this or you can die. There's no other way. He that abideth in this city shall die by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence. But he that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live. In other words, you got to surrender. You got to give up. Now, when we're saved, if you're really saved, you surrender your life to the Lord. I mean, it's not like you've got a choice. I mean, you know, when God saves you, especially right then, you are so on fire, you know, I want to do something for the Lord and everything like that. Now, we need to understand, God does not need us. We definitely need God. But, he says, but he that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live. And his life shall be unto him for a prey. You're going to be a slave. That's all that's going to be left for you. For I have set my face against this city for evil, and not for good. Saith the Lord, it shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. Going to tear it completely down. Going to burn it with fire. Everything gone. All right, to 2 Kings again, chapter 24, and wait a minute. 2 Kings 25, beginning with verse 1. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, or the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, just like Jeremiah said, came he and all his hosts against Jerusalem and pitched against it, and they built forts against it round about. They even built forts around there, fortified places, positions. And the city was besieged until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. So 2 years. I was right. I remembered. And the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. They were running out of food. And the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between the two walls, which is by the king's garden, or the king's gate. This is where the king was to come in from the king's palace. And the fighting men, they fled out that way. And then it goes on. Now the Chaldeans were against the city round about. They were right up close. And the king went the way toward the plain. He went the other direction. The other direction. Now, I think this towards the plain would have been towards the southeast. And I could be wrong about that, but I believe that was what the gate that they were talking about. Anyway, in verse 5, and the army of the Chaldees, pursued after the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. Yeah, that would be southeast. And all his army was scattered from him. In other words, he was all by himself. They skedaddled. They didn't protect the king. They said, we're getting out of here. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon, to Riblah, and they gave judgment upon him. Had a trial here. Now, this is a trial of God. Now, Babylon was doing it. The Chaldees were doing it. They were running the show according to their thoughts. But he was being judged by God. He was just using these people to do it. Verse 7, and they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. And they put out the eyes of Zedekiah and bound him with fetters of brass and carried him to Babylon. So the last thing he saw with his eyes was his children being killed. Wouldn't that be a terrible picture? That's what he had to live with the rest of his life. And they bound him up with fetters of brass. I think this was so he couldn't possibly get away. And they carried him to Babylon, out of his homeland. Verse 8, in the fifth month, on the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. So the big general's coming. And he burnt the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. So everything is all burnt. Nothing left. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down the walls of Jerusalem round about. Now, our pastor has mentioned before, when they went through and they destroyed the land, they meant it. They destroyed the land. There was nothing left of them for them. But they didn't take everybody. They didn't take everybody. Verse 11, now the rest of the people that were left in the city and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon with the remnant of the multitude did Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carry away. But the captain of the guard left of the poor of the land to be vine dressers and husbandmen. They left the poor folks there. All those that had substance, those that had been blessed of God, they were taken away. But the poor folks, they were left there. You know, well, okay, you can be a vine dresser or a husband, you know, farmer. But it doesn't end there. Verse 13, and the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord, and the bases and the brazen sea that was in the house of the Lord, did the Chaldees break in pieces and carry the brass of them to Babylon, and the pots and the shovels and the snuffers and the spoons and all the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered, took they away. Everything, they took it away. They were stripping the Lord's house. Why? Because the Lord wouldn't go meet with them there anymore. Not for a long time anyway. Not next week, but week after next, we'll study a little bit. And the fire pans and the bowls and such things as were of gold and gold and of silver and silver, the captain of the guard took away. Anything of value is gone. The two pillars, one sea, and the bases which Solomon had made for the house of the Lord, the brass of all these vessels was without weight. There was so much of it they couldn't weigh it. And they took it all away. Why? Because Israel and Judah had turned their back on God. They had served false gods. And we live in a time where you don't have so much idol. We have things that we make idols. One of them is the big screen TV. And some people idolize certain politicians. Some idolize certain actors or actresses, song singers. It's hard to tell what people will idolize. That's a word that you need to be scared of. Anyway, verse 17, the height of one pillar was 18 cubits, and the chapiter, or capital, that's the fancy thing on top, was brass, and the height of the chapter 3 cubits, and the recent work in the pomegranates upon the chapiter round about it, all of brass, like unto these had the second pillar with the recent work. So the second one was sort of like the first one. It was about the same size, but it had a different capital on it. Verse 18, and the captain of the guard took Sarai, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the three keepers of the door, and out of the city he took an officer that was set over the men of war, and five men of them that were in the king's presence, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host, which mustered the people of the land, and 80 men of the people of the land that were found in the city. Everybody that was still in the city, those that hadn't skedaddled, those that had a position, we'll say. And Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, took these and brought them to the king of Babylon, to Riblah. And the king of Babylon smote them and slew them in Riblah in the land of Hamath. So Judah was carried away out of their land. So you might think this is the end of Judah. Now we know that there's some other things coming up as far as this being Israel, or part of Israel. Pretty much is. Verse 22, and as for the people that remained in the land of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had left, even over them he made Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, ruler. Now, it says ruler. Zedekiah, he called king, even though the king of Babylon was the one that appointed him. But this guy they called ruler. And if we read on, we'll find out he wasn't really a ruler. And verse 23, and when the captains of the armies, they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah governor. You know, Kentucky has a governor. He's not a king. Ohio sort of kind of has a governor. He's not a king. There's a big difference, isn't there? They came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, even Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and Johanan, the son of Kareah, and Seraiah, the son of Tanhumath, I'm not even going to try to pronounce these last two. Anyway, the son of Maachathite, they and their men. So these came, and these were of the old guard sort of kind of people. These were the ones that you would think would stand. And I have no idea how they survived to this point. But they did. So, verse 24, and Zedaliah sware to them and to their men and said unto them, fear not to be the servants of the Chaldees, dwell in the land and serve the king of Babylon, and it shall be well with you. So he swore. I don't know whether he used the Lord's name, he swore, but you know, you can stay here and you can serve the Chaldees and the king of Babylon, and things are going to be well. Things are going to be just hunky-dory. Doesn't matter that the city's flatter and a flitter now. Everything of value has been taken. The only thing left is the poor folks, the vineyards, and farms. Verse 25, but it came to pass in the seventh month, Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal. So he was in the line of the royal family here. Came, and 10 men with him, and smote Gedaliah, that he died. And the Jews and the Chaldees that were with him at Mizpah. So not only killed him, all the Jews that were standing around about wanting to be with the guy in charge, you know, who they thought was in charge. He wasn't in charge. God was the one in charge. And because of the evil that he was doing, God took him out too. And all the people, both small and great, and the captains of the armies arose and came to Egypt, for they were afraid of the Chaldees. So those that were left of the armies, not necessarily of the vine dressers and the farmers, but all the rest of them went to Egypt because they were afraid. They knew because of what had happened that they would be killed. Anyway, we're going to stop there. And everybody, stay tuned. Pastor's got a great message in about 5 minutes.